closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey everybody, welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul, that's Robert Ramirez.
That's me.
We're together again, and we took a week off, a little bit of separation.
Yeah, we needed it. But
we did. It was more so me.
Not you. No, I did.
I needed a great conversation with Simone Turkington. If you haven't listened, it was great.
Yeah, you should go. If you haven't, you audience, you go back and listen to it as well.
You were supposed to be there, but you got scheduled at the BB.
I had 9 days in a row at Best Buy.
It's funny how this like has become just like it started as just like a casual thing for you to kind of supplement magic income, and now it's become your full-time life. But you know what? I think that's smart because
it's the only thing I got going for me.
As vaccines roll out and companies are doing that thing they did a couple months ago of like, hey, we'll be able to do live events soon. The virtuals are slowing down just a tad. So,
well, we'll see.
Which is good. I would prefer that. I would prefer that there's, you know, less virtuals and we can go back to the real world.
I mean, speaking of virtual shows.
Hey, wow, what a segue.
Yeah. We're doing a show on Saturday.
I was going to say.
I hate you.
We're doing a show Saturday, February 6th at 7 p.m. And if you use, it's called Fake Magic Real Friends. And I am admitting right now, I subconsciously stole the name of the Scrubs podcast. I didn't realize I did it until, no joke, 10 hours later when my wife saw the posting and goes, oh, that's funny. Just like the Scrubs podcast. And I go, damn it! So, you know, I'm going to write into them apologizing too. So
yeah,
you
should.
I didn't do that purposely. We were talking back and forth. I'm like, what about this? And you're like, it's great. And then I made the poster and I made the Eventbrite ticket link and everything was up. And then 10 hours later, I realized what I did.
One of my favorite videos to find is people who are like writing music and they're like trying to write an original song and it turns into something else that is already known. There's one of a guy doing the Office theme. And it's like called like How I Accidentally Wrote the Office Theme. They're like a minute long and he's just playing this like chord progression that sounds great. And he just gets more complicated. And the more complicated it gets, the more it starts to sound like the Office Theme until he's just playing the Office Theme. And he just stares in the camera like, oh, God damn it.
That is the problem with creating lately for me. It's just like you think you have this original idea and you're like, no, it's like from some weird, absurd thing I consumed a month ago and I'm not even thinking about.
I feel like music's easier to accidentally like recreate other than like magic is harder because there's so much information in books that no one's ever read that it takes the person who created it to go, hey, I actually published that 30 years ago. And you go, how was I supposed to know that?
Yep. I had, and before I forget, use code 2MAGICIANS at checkout to get 20% off tickets.
Nice.
Our first show sold out, so we need more people to come to the 7 p.m. show. So please come.
Yes.
Please come. And if for some reason you can't, like if you're like in a financial bind, I'm going to put this up on the Facebook and Instagram too. If you're in like some financial bind and you can't, like you want to see the show but you can't afford it,
we'll pay you. We'll pay you.
we will pay you to
come. Yeah. If you don't have the money, we'll pay you.
That is a great business model, right?
Like, yeah.
What could go wrong?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm watching the masterclass of the lady who invented Spanx right now, and she's a brilliant business lady. And
now, wait. What is... Nick is now holding on to something because he's realized what he has just said is crazy. Nick.
No, it's not. It's
Nick,
smart.
What is the masterclass, though? It's so not on making Spanx.
No.
Because that's what it sounds like.
I'm three classes in, and I have my whole line of Spanx. They're magic Spanx. Spanx by Nick Paul. No, it's just a business class. It's like 10 episodes of, hey, okay. I started with $5,000. I had this idea and now it's a $1 billion company. And she's not saying you can do that, but she's saying, here's the things that work for me.
Yeah.
And her one thing was like, you know, idea. And I forget why I brought it up now. I'm not.
You should start that conversation. If you ever tell the story again, start with, I'm taking a business masterclass and not, I'm taking the masterclass with the woman who invented Spanx.
But the thing is, I want people to watch it because it's real. It just came up as just like a suggestion.
Ooh.
And I go, sure, I'll give this a whirl. And I'm so invested in it. I'm learning so much. I'm only like three classes in.
I'm so afraid to go into the masterclass website to find like the thing that I'm just like, oh my God, I'm going to spend all this money to watch this thing.
It was even the Penn and Teller one. Like all the magic they teach, if you're a magician, even if you're a hobbyist magician, you'll know it all. But the real nuggets of knowledge are in the classes where they don't teach magic and they're teaching magic theory.
Yeah.
And it was really good. And it's stuff like you kind of already know as a professional magician. But
it's always a good reminder.
Yeah, they hit it on the head so well. And that right there was worth the cost. So, and you get access to all of them.
Now, if you guys can't afford Masterclass, give us an email and we'll pay you to take a Masterclass.
To get then you give us the notes.
Yeah.
So that saves time.
You give us the Spark notes.
Though the reason I brought it up is I'm going to say, I don't think the Spanx lady would say that's a good business model. She was really big on, like, the biggest thing I've taken away so far is, like, when you're creating a product, and I think this applies to magic people too, people who put up products like yourselves. It's like, okay, you need to be selling it for five times the cost. And if you can't do that, at least, you're going to lose money and you shouldn't be selling your product.
Yeah. It's kind of hard, especially. Like with me with downloads, if it's just like a card slight or whatever,
different because it's not a physical thing.
I think it's crazy when certain magic websites will sell that at like $15, and you just kind of go, "What? How is that? That costing him? That cost him nothing."
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's why I put out I've only put out one product. It's on my website, the Charlie silhouette thing.
Yeah.
And you know, I just kind of just did it here, but I put it out super cheap for that reason.
Correct.
I'm like, I don't want people to expect like they're getting more. They're getting something good, but I don't want them to expect like they're getting this like revolutionary thing.
And I try, like, all my downloads are $6 on my website because they're mostly card stuff or like easy stuff. And the only thing that is like $10, I think it is the paper that you can get, or the pattern sheet you can get for the circle square thing, where it's one color on one side of the page and one color on the other side of the page, because Gwen made 50 different patterns that you could choose from with different colors. So the only reason I made it more expensive, because it was a product that you in theory could make, but most people won't go through Photoshop to actually make the color pattern that they wanted. So we gave them so many options, and I kind of went, well, this is like, that actually took work and took time for Gwen to actually make. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess I kind of have to do that with my Charlie one. I give it to you, but you still have to cut it out. Because for me, I guess there's a way I could be selling that individually too, but it's the cost thing. It's going back to what I was bringing up. Also the time thing too. It's like, okay, I have to put a factor in time and cost now. And then the price goes up. So I'd rather just sell it for cheaper. And then I don't think people mind, you know, doing a little bit of the arts and crafts themselves, but
no, absolutely not.
That's everybody's thing. I don't know. It's just in this whole, we're in this weird, you know, you're in the Best Buy. I'm in the weird magic thing where I'm, you know, working on two different other people's virtual shows in small capacities than my own. And still it's like, okay, I'm always thinking about like, what's the longevity of all this? And it feels like, I think virtual shows will always have a place, at least for like another year. But still I'm thinking, okay, what's next? What's the longevity?
Well, what's crazy is I know some magicians that do virtual shows that just said, even if everything opens up, they're going to do virtual shows forever because they're able to reach a clientele that they can't live. They can still do these corporate of gigs or whatever in that
capacity. I think these corporates that will keep doing them, certain companies will, I think it will become the norm. And it is nice when you get one, because it's funny, you're making, at least in my, everybody's case is different, but you know, I'm making less money than I would live, but once I factor in travel and time and you know, hotel costs and car rental costs, it's like, oh, I'm making the same amount of money, but I don't have to go anywhere. And that's honestly the biggest perk of virtual shows. Like, you miss that human connection, but man, it's so nice to just finish the show, walk upstairs and have dinner with your family.
That was something that I took away from watching In and of Itself, was the like missing being able to tell those like stories, like being able to take your time and stuff. And I like, it made me rethink, like, so I've been practicing. I've realized I haven't touched a deck of cards or done any sleights in almost 8 months, maybe.
Wow.
Like, it kind of, it scared me. I had realized that, like, I don't know if I can do some of these things. So yesterday I was practicing a gambling demonstration I used to do that I'm going to do for the show. But as I was putting my hands, I kind of was like, oh yeah, okay, it's fine. It's still there. But it did feel weird. And the only thing that I thought was like, I didn't have a story for it. I was just going through a gambling demonstration like most people go through gambling demonstrations. But watching Derek Delgadio almost tell a story through that piece about, you know, being a card shark and like the lessons he was learning, he was doing those slights without mentioning he was doing the slights, which I thought was like made it way more interesting because it made you have to listen to what the story he was telling, but it also made you visually watch what he was doing, which was really great. So I'm trying to figure out a fun story to go with this routine that doesn't come, that isn't me telling you, oh, this is how I would cheat with a deck of cards.
Yeah, I mean, it just came out on Hulu. Highly recommended. I mean, if you're a magician, you're aware of the show in New York. But man, and I never, when I was in New York, it was, I think it was dark or I wasn't able to get tickets. And it was, I was really bummed out because you heard so many good things about it.
You weren't able to get tickets because Bill Gates was in the goddamn audience.
Yeah, that was my favorite thing. This isn't giving away anything, but he's like, you were a leader. Like, I just love, like, it's so great that that's exposed for the world that Bill Gates wants to be seen as a leader. And, like, and there's no shame in that. That clearly he is. He created Microsoft. He's done a lot of great things with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. But, man, just breaking through. And it just broke through this layer of honesty that I think so much of us hide. But, man, it's, I mean, I'm butchering it, not doing it justice, but certainly watch it. Hey, Derek, if you're listening, come on the podcast, please.
Please.
We want to talk about theater with you.
And if you can't afford to see our show, we'll pay you.
Derek's having a tough time right now with all those
with all that royalty checks, that Hulu money.
But the thing is, you don't know. I know that, you know, streaming shows don't pay as well, and so it could be a case of, you know, it's a buyout and it's out there, but
oh yeah,
you know, I'm just glad it's out there.
Well,
I think it's important for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, there's I had this conversation with someone a couple months ago where there was a live stage show filmed for TV, not Hamilton. There's another one that was out there like right before Hamilton came out. What on earth?
Do you know what streaming service it was?
I almost want to say it was the Irving Berlin like Holiday Inn thing they did on Broadway for a little bit. It was like Corbin Bleu was in it. It was this big thing. It was all the choreography. It was amazing. And they shot it, and people were like, meh. It like was shot weird. It did, like was, had weird zoom-ins and weird close-ups of things and like was missing like these great pictures of like choreography that were happening. And then Hamilton came out, and everyone was like, oh, this is so much better. And it was because it was the original directors, Lynn and Alex Lacamoire and Tommy Cale and Andy Blankenbuehler, and one of the producers of Hamilton put in some like $10 million to film the show. And because it was their money and the people who put it together, they were able to have complete control of how that movie was seen.
Sure.
So they had full control over that show. So when you watch Hamilton on Hulu, it's shot perfectly because the people who directed it, wrote it, were in control of it. And so, you know, they knew the investment of putting millions of dollars in to film it were going to come back, because I'm sure Disney paid a way more money for the rights of it. So they just knew the investment. And so the other show just didn't have that money. It was just someone, whatever, some producers going, oh, we should film this because it's great. So you could just tell from the money. And you can tell in and of itself that the Colberts put like enough money and time into that show to make sure that you got the show across through screen. And I think that was something that came across really well in the show, is that it did feel like you were in the theater with them. And it's exactly how you would have experienced it in the theater.
Yeah, what's so brilliant is like anytime you had somebody up on stage with them, they cut between like 10 people. Just the editing was perfect.
Correct.
Because that could get jarring. but it was just enough to prove that this is not set up and this is going to be different.
Yeah, it made you. It was great because it proved to you that it was always different. That this moment in the show was always different, and it also proved to you. It also showed you other people's experiences that were on stage with him, because it varied a lot. So it was really well shot, well edited. I mean, everything was put together perfectly to show that show of how it was done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's
like they clearly took their time editing that. Like, there was no rush to put that out.
Correct. They knew the shots they were going to get. They needed. That's what it was. And that was the same thing with Hamilton. They knew what they needed to get in order to get the product they
wanted. Hamilton did a great job of, okay, here's the close-ups that we shot, maybe on our own or maybe for like a free audience. And then cutting, just the way they cut that one together was pretty amazing, because it's like, you know, that's not the same night, because there was a camera next to Lynn's face and now there's not.
Yeah.
But man, that was just, the editors did brilliant work on that one too.
We're not going to have any editing in our show.
Our show's no edits.
No edits.
It's live.
It's going to be what it is. It's going to be on Zoom.
We are so late to the ticketed magic show game, but I feel like this show is going to be different. Like the shows we watch, and like we talked to Vinny, I watch Vinny's shows, great. Definitely check it out. Theory 11 show's great. Justin's show's great. But I feel like we're able to, okay, we've worked on these or we've seen these and we're able to do our own thing. And I hope it comes across. I mean, it's a big experiment, and that's what's nice about this weird situation we're in, because if it doesn't work, I mean, I don't think it's going to be a bad show, but if it doesn't feel different than other shows, then, well, okay, well, we tried, but it's nice that there's not too much of a risk right now. You're not losing too much money.
Correct. And I think what's going to be really fun, I mean, just from the poster, if you haven't seen the poster, it really comes across, like, our sense of humor comes across, and the kind of show we want to have comes across in that poster, which is why when you sent it to me, I went, oh my God, that's, like, perfect, because it's not just, like, an elegant poster. It's quite funny in what it looks like, but it also, you understand the evening just from looking at that poster, that you go, mm-hmm. Got it. Like, this is going to be, it's kind of funny, silly, enjoyable from within that poster. And I think that's also a really hard thing to get across through posters.
Yeah, and I hope so, because that once again, it came from the Spanx lady. She was talking about, you know, when you're coming up with ideas, it can be anything. Everybody has a $1 in a million idea, but it really just, at the end of the day, you need to know, you know, what you're passionate about, and you need to remember the why. It's like, hey, why am I doing this? And I think when we're up on stage, I am always reminded of, oh, I'm doing this to have fun and be silly and just have a good time. And that's, with all the work and the chaos that goes into this business, it's very easy to forget that. So
yeah.
I know. Hopefully, it comes across. If not, it'll crash and burn. But
either way, the
magic will be good.
Correct. My theory is, like, we're gonna be doing that. Like, the plan, even when I do any show, like at the castle and stuff, the plan was always like, what's the bare minimum of just a good magic show that you could do, and like the material that we already do and have would be completely great as a standalone magic show. It would be great. It's not even fine. It would actually be great. So because we have that baseline already, it's now exciting to take chances on a weird piece, or take chances on doing a weirder thing, or one or two things, or whatever. Because if last minute you go, oh, that's not working as we're, you know, teching it or whatever, then we just go back to a thing that we know how to do that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like, to me, that's what I'm excited about, because I'm like trying to put this gambling routine with a new story to it. If like I get to the Saturday morning and I'm just like, I just like can't figure it out, then I'll just do it the way I've been doing it, because it still works and it's great. But that's why I love working with people that like have material and are like pretty set in it. Like, you were great on that, and like John Accardo is a Nathan fan. Like, the three of you guys had your sets to go, and then we were able to play around and go, well, what if we did this?
Sure,
and we're not afraid to be like, that sucks, let's just do the other thing, which is like really hard to remember.
Yeah, and I think it's important when you're creating something, like, I used to think it was laziness, but I do think it works to your advantage sometimes when you're working on something that you've done a whole bunch of different times and you know it really well. But I don't know, then you have more confidence in it, and then you're able to change it and switch it up because you're like, well, okay, I know it works this way, so let's test it out and see, you know, how much we can expand the idea. And if it doesn't work, then you go back to the original idea, like you were saying.
Yeah, and I think the original idea is never a bad idea. The problem is when magicians, to me, the problem is when magicians do a set that they've done for 40 years, 30 years, because they don't want to take a risk, or they just feel so comfortable that they go, well, this works. Why change it? And I think, you know, you're restricting yourself from trying to create something else, and then just going back to that if you have to. You spend all this time creating this piece that's going to now be your default. It's almost like you've created this piece that you feel is a 10, and it's always going to be a 10, but you now have room to push it farther or try something different. And if anything, you can go back to that thing that you know is a 10.
Yeah, and I'm certainly super guilty of that. But, you know, it's in years like this, and in you know, when you're thrown into different types of gigs where those routines don't work anymore, it's just such a nice... It's basically the universe forcing you to get out of your shell. And I guess that's kind of what these virtual shows are. It's like, yeah, we have to go faster. You can't do slow stories. Like, you know, I'm learning that a routine has to be between 2 and 4 minutes because you got to keep people paying attention, and because, you know, they're watching their computer screen. So it's a different sort of fatigue, and there's crap going on like we've talked about before. But that's still, it's a good kick in the butt to go, well, I wouldn't normally do this, so let's try it out and see if we can figure out something with it.
My plan is on Saturday, if I start to see the little boxes of people not looking, I'm just going to take my clothes off.
Fine. You know, as long as children aren't in there, it's okay.
Oh.
Oh, this got awkward. He didn't know.
I didn't know. I'm not wearing any clothes at the moment.
Oh, we can't broadcast this.
Well, then what's the point?
What's the point of doing a magic show if you can't take your clothes off?
Come on.
Come on. You know, I get worried about things people take out of context on this podcast. that's one of them right there.
Yikes.
There was something else I wanted to write. I put in the notes here, and now I forget. But
I guess you didn't put it in the notes then.
I didn't. I'm like, what's that thing? I put it in my notes. No, I didn't. If you want to give us a couple bucks a month on Patreon, do that. That's very nice. The people that support the show, it really is appreciative, and it means a lot that A, people listen to us babbling, but B, people support the show. So that's very nice, because I don't want to get advertisers in, and we could make more money with advertisers, but, you know, I skip past them.
Well, then we can do those
podcasts I listen to. I skip past them.
Let's just make up our own. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Here, I got Lady Bella Strings.
I love Lady Bella Strings.
Nick, have you ever played the ukulele and thought, man, these strings suck? I wish I had better strings.
I, all the time.
Well, you should get... Wait, what did I call it?
I don't know. I thought this was an actual product. Well, I don't actually play the ukulele.
It is.
We're failing. I'm reading. This is why you can't do marketing.
But I'm reading it, and I... Oh, my God. Okay, so it says Labella Strings, but I... But like the
so you got the name wrong.
But then I looked at it and then I was like, did I say L.A. Bella?
I don't know what you said.
I need to ask the Spanx lady what to do, because I am just falling apart here.
She would tell you to come up with your own idea and maybe make your own ukulele strings if there's a need for it in the market.
There always is a need. There's, you know what? That's what I'm learning from Best Buy is there's. You know, people come in more often. I'm surprised by this. More people come in and ask, hey, do you have landlines? Where are your house phones?
Huh. Yeah.
That happens. We have an aisle for it. But every time people come in and say it, I'm like, what?
What age are these people?
Really old.
Okay. Yeah. That market is still there. Like when I worked at Circuit City years ago, like I would always get asked about the landlines, and it was always from an old lady in her 70s. And then she would ask me how big the buttons were. And I'd say, I don't know. Let's open the box. Yeah, there's a need for it. It's funny. Kristen called her grandma the other day, and she's like, she's not picking up her cell phone. What's going on? And she asked her dad. Her dad goes, oh, yeah, she doesn't pick that up. You got to call the landline. It just went immediately to voicemail. Yeah. Grandma's busy playing bingo. But yeah, there's always a need. It's funny. People think you're like, okay, that's done. But there is a need for things. And you kind of, that's what I've been just trying to think and write in my notebook and ideas of just like, okay, where's the need for something. Like, clearly Spanx, there was a need for that. There was a need for footless pantyhose. I'm a dude. I don't wear pantyhose most of the time.
But I wear Spanx.
But I wear Spanx. By the way, use promo code 2magicians.
I've worn Spanx once a month. Once? There was a show I had to do where I had to wear Spanx for some reason.
Go on.
I think I've worn a leotard once or twice in my life for a show, and I think I have Spanx underneath that.
I think I had tutu in a high school theater production of something.
You had a tutu?
I had to wear a tutu, and I had to wear Spanx at the same exact time.
I think you wear Spanx and tutu. No, I don't know.
It's just, it's only on the weekends.
Yeah, so. In college, we would do this thing we did a Christmas show every year, and at the last rehearsal, or we'd always warm up before the show. We'd like get together, the whole cast, and there was 40 of us, because there's 40 Citrus Singers. And so the last rehearsal of the Christmas show, or the last warm-up, is you would just grab anybody else's costume and put it on. And then we'd sit in the circle and we'd play Duck Duck Goose wearing other people's costume. And it's a 3-year program. So the first year, of course, I grabbed the dress. I grabbed, you know, whoever had like the fanciest dress. That's what I wore for Duck Duck Goose. And then the second year, I, of course, grabbed a dress that, because I was slender, I could fit in a nice little lady's dress. And then the third year, I thought, I'm not going to wear a dress this year. Like, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to surprise everybody, and I'm going to wear something else. But I got there late, and the only thing that was left over was a dress.
There's Robert putting on his dress again.
And I was just in shame going, I didn't want to do this.
What's funny, I used to do this bit with my buddy back in Chicago. He would come up as Charlene, my beautiful assistant. And, you know, he's from Saudi Arabia. He has a beard. And he literally walked up with just his regular clothes and had a gun. And I just think about that now and go, I don't think I can get away with that. I think we would get a lot of angry letters. And I guess I kind of agree with that.
Yeah, I think you'd have to, like, really write it correctly in order for it to work. Yeah. So I think it could work, but the setup would have to be right. Mm-hmm. I feel like back in the day, it was you didn't need a setup for it. The setup was like, here's my female assistant, and then it wasn't. And I think you could still set it up. So Alex Ramone does he makes his long haired dachshund appear in a Dakota chair. So he has the chair sitting there, and he goes, you know, every magician needs a blonde assistant. A long-haired blonde assistant. So he covers the chair, and then the shape of a person shows up, and the shape moves, which is fantastic. And then when he whisks the thing away, it's his long-haired dachshund, and it's such a great setup for it because it's just worded perfectly. And
I'm just mad. There's another magician using dachshunds in his show.
You will
be hearing from my lawyers.
Man, that dog is super trained, though. I would hate to be that dog. I know. He's so loved, but he is like military trained.
Yeah, you have to be. We thought about when we did the Palace show, I thought about doing the rascal trick and bringing him and having him run on stage. I'm like, what if he just like runs into the audience? We've never done this before.
So what's MJ is the dog's name. MJ was trained on a cruise ship. So Alex had him like when he was like 6 weeks old, like the youngest you could get a dog.
The easiest way to train a dog.
Correct.
Yeah, for sure.
So he would do training where he would be on the deck of the cruise ship and have him stay so that people would be walking around him and he wouldn't get distracted by anything moving around him because it was just crowded with people. And then he'd call him over. Mm-hmm. So like he got so used to there's nothing that can distract that dog. The second he calls the command, MJ just stares at him. And you literally couldn't distract him because he's just used to things around him moving.
I just need to pick his brain. How did he get a dog on a cruise ship? Regular? Like, if he was going only in the U.S., that's one thing, because we travel with our dogs, and it's just to do anything outside of the U.S. with an animal is just so much red tape and a pain in the ass.
Well, you should ask him.
I will. I'll have to read.
Alex Ramone, if you're listening to this. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. We totally should.
We should. I've only seen him in the Palace. I think I saw him twice in the Palace, different years. But, yeah, I've enjoyed his stuff. He does very
good. I'm not saying that I have a video of his show that I will show you. I'm not saying that. That's not being said on the podcast. But
why do you have a video of his show?
Because I had to do. Jim sent me 3 videos of things I had to edit for a reel for Jim. Which was very funny because Jim was getting an award and he said, and whoever was like giving the award was like, oh, we need like a reel of your work. And he was like, what? So then he sent me a bunch of videos. He's like, cut this.
Just put the, you know how to use iMovie.
Pretty much, and I did an iMovie. But one of the things was, because all of Alex's show, not a majority of Alex's show, is Steinmeier material. So he was like, cut this. So I have his palace show on video. Yeah, and I watch it, and I steal it.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
I had some witty retort, and I let it go.
like a good fart. You just let it go.
Let it go.
Don't sing the rest of it. We're gonna get sued.
That's why I did it off key. Also, because I'm not a very good singer. That two reasons right there.
Is Kristen a good singer?
She was in choir. We're both
That didn't answer my question.
Well, the thing is, yeah, like we're both. She's not a Broadway singer, but she can carry a tune. We can both
carry
a tune.
Okay,
we can fake it. You know, it's like when I play drums, I can fake it pretty well until somebody like tells me to be, you know, John Bonham or something.
Because Gwen always says, she's like, oh, I'm not a singer, but she always sings along to songs, or like will sing a cappella of like something, like a bit that she'll sing, and she's completely in key and in tune the whole time. And I always think,
yeah,
like,
same with
her. Yeah,
I think it's weird for me, like it depends on the song. Some songs, like Jamie Cullum songs, I can sing along with. I sound like I know how to sing, and then I'll listen to something else and I'm just so off key. It's the weirdest thing of how that I don't know. I get so in my head, or I hear my voice strange ways.
I get in my head. I'm trying to do. Oh my God, you should do this. So Taylor Hughes bought a ukulele bass days after showed him mine.
Oh yeah, he told me that. That's
yeah, the next day he was like, I'm buying one. And I was like, okay. And then the day after that, he went, I sold my banjo and I got one. It's coming tomorrow. And then
Taylor is so good about, you know, just like jumping on something. Okay, I want to work on this.
Yeah.
But the flip side of that is he convinces you to put money down on a Tesla, which I did. Anyway.
That makes me think of Silicon Valley, that he wants to have the best rims. Taylor wants the best rims, is trying to have everybody sign up for a Tesla.
This one has plaid mode.
It's ludicrous.
Ludicrous speed. That was it. Yeah, yeah. Because there is a plaid mode thing coming out with Tesla. But yeah, ludicrous speed is also a thing, which is my favorite. Which is why I love the company so much. They put in weird things like dog mode. Someone tweeted at Elon Musk and said, hey, can you like have a mode in the car when I run into the store that it leaves the air conditioning on and there's a thing on the screen that says, hey, I'm fine, my owner will be back soon. And Elon Musk just replies, yes. and then literally like a month later, everybody got that in the software update for free.
That's
and
fantastic.
Like, I love that about the company. And it's like, yeah, I'm sure people have their grievances. But you know what? Like, I think for the most part, they're trying to do good things and trying to, you know, be clever. And
guys, if you want something in the show on Saturday, tweet us. Instagram
and we
us.
Will pay you
for the suggestion, and we'll put it in our show. If you want us playing frisbee wearing earmuffs, we will do it.
Well, DM me on the Instagram, because I'm not on the Twitters too much.
I'm
but,
not either.
Or send us an email, twomagicianswillmike@gmail.com.
I was banned from Twitter.
Were you really?
Inciting violence against magicians.
Heyo!
Hey!
Hey! Whoa! Oh! Free speech.
Okay.
okay. This is something I just thought of and jotted down, and because I'm, you know, I think we're all trying to be better at times. What's something? I'll tell you what I'm working on trying to be better at. What's something you're working on trying to be better at? It doesn't not magic, but just like as a human. For me, I'm trying to be less judgmental and
that's a good one.
Try to not like. Think mean things or be offended, or like if somebody does something that's like a friend or something, I'm trying not to be basically a dick.
That's good.
Because I do that sometimes just kind of my own way
or even to yourself.
I'll just think something and that's I don't think that's helpful in any way.
No, I think you're right. I think that really does take a toll on yourself, because even though you keep it to yourself, there is something in that you're still thinking about, whether or not you tell somebody, and it's this weird judgmental thing that like mentally happens. That's a good one. I will adopt that. I am trying to be better at maintaining cleanliness around the house. Gwen and I deep clean a lot of stuff, and then it just gets out of control again, and then we have to deep clean again. So it's like trying to figure out a way to be aware and not be you know, thinking like, oh, I'll clean that dish up tomorrow, or I'll pick that up tomorrow, I'll throw that in the trash tomorrow. But like seeing things around and actually maintaining like a moderate cleanse rather than going into a deep cleanse every 2 weeks or whatever, where you have to like really deep clean, which is really
hard. That's a tricky thing. I grew up, like, as much as I hated it as a kid, every Sunday was like cleaning day. So I would have my chores and I would get like, I think $5 a week or something from my parents. But that, as much as I freaking hated it as a kid, it instilled something in me of, okay, just A, like being able to save money, or okay, I'm making $5. If I save it for next week, I can buy a video game or something like that. But also instilled just the constant battle. It's like working out.
Yeah.
It's like, I think people have this idea of like, oh, once I'm skinny, it's done.
Yeah.
No, you have to maintain that. Like you have to get to that mindset. And it's the same with being clean too.
Does Kristen pay you the $5 every Sunday?
She does.
That's good.
Because I'm the one that does, she'll admit this, I'm the one that does the dishes. We don't have a dishwasher.
We need a hat.
I almost purchased a little portable dishwasher that like would sit on the top, but it only like houses like 4 plates. I'm like, plates are the easiest thing to clean. I want some pot cleaning.
We need to figure out the day and the occasion to do this, but I really think it would be so funny and good that if we do Two Magicians, One Podcast, but it's not me and you, it's Gwen and Kristen.
She really wants to do the show, and I think we should have them in and just like get, they can talk for most of it about their experience. I almost brought her in today, but she was starting to work on something. So I do need to do that, and I kick myself for not having, she's reminded me, you've had a lot of people on, but yeah, you haven't. And it's not purpose. It's not on purpose. It's just, we do these so last minute sometimes.
We should do it on Valentine's Day.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. So we have to record it before? What day is Valentine's Day? The 14th?
The 14th.
Oh, I got engaged that day. I should know.
Wow. See, if Kristen was here, she'd be so mad.
She's cool about that. She'd be like, whatever.
I want you to turn around and yell, when is our engagement? When did we get engaged? And I want you to tell me how fast she responds. Do it right now. Do it right now.
I'm not going to yell it, but I'm going to...
Kristen! Peeking out of his little sound booth.
I'm in the sound booth and the door is closed.
She's going to be more annoyed that she has to walk all the way over to open the door.
I know.
The best is hearing you yell from like a distance. It's like my favorite part of this bit.
She's working on something.
Don't disturb her.
We'll get her on.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel bad.
Ooh, that's a really fun game we could do on Valentine's is how well do you know your partner? What is that called? What game is that called?
The dating game?
No.
The matchmaker?
No, it was...
The know your mate or something like that. They would play it on cruise ships.
They always said
the
whoopee. He always said making whoopee.
Yeah, right. That was always like the third question. It was all every cruise ship I've been on where they do it. It's like, where was the craziest place you've made whoopee? And like these people that you know live in suburbia. Some are very surprising answers. One was on a freeway as the car was moving. I'll never forget that one.
It's the newlywed game.
Newlywed. Yep. Oh, yeah. Okay, maybe.
Bob Eubanks hosted the newlywed game.
Oh, yeah. You're thinking of the actual show. I was trying to think of the name on cruise ships.
Oh, no. I was thinking of the actual show that was on television that essentially
yes, I'm familiar
everybody
with
did.
The newlywed game. I'm not that much of an idiot.
Hey, when did you get engaged?
Krista! She's probably going to be... I wonder if she might have headphones on.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah. But, you know, well, that's good. We're both working on things and doing things.
Yeah,
and
that's good.
If you want to come to the show, like I said, it'd be great if you could pay for it. It's only $25 a ticket, and you can use that for your computer machine with your whole family.
Yeah.
So that's like, if you have a family of 4 or a family of 5, that's only like $5 a person.
Yeah, that's great math.
And, yeah. So, but if you can't afford it, you know, send us a little message. We'll gladly give you a link. Everybody's doing what they can to help these days.
Yeah,
but
and
if
it's
you
good
do get a ticket,
it's good for us.
Two Magicians is the code for 20% off.
It's good for us, too, to just have people doing it so we can figure out what this is.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, what's nice is we both have each about 60 minutes of virtual material.
Yeah.
So, like, we know the material is going to be fine, but we're just trying to figure out, I think, especially after watching, like, In and of Itself and a bunch of shows, like, friends of ours who've done that have a great through line, we're trying to just kind of pop our head into that and go, okay, what is this? How does this work?
Yeah, it's really interesting to see that it is possible. And I think In and of Itself was very interesting because the first piece of, quote, magic he did was the little paper thing into the bottle, which is, like... Mm-hmm. 15, 20 minutes into the show.
Oh, yeah. And it's so great because if you showed up and didn't know there was magic involved.
Correct.
It's such a great moment of like, wait, what? Did I miss something?
Yeah.
You don't, he doesn't set it up as a magic trick. And that's why it's so powerful.
I had this conversation with somebody yesterday about that. And somebody was like, you know, why is the show so popular? And I think it was because when I went to New York, you know, people, it became almost this secret of, hey, you should see this weird show. It's like this very poetic kind of one-man show you should go see. But here...
Even when Colbert had him on the show,
correct.
They didn't know how to describe
correct.
It. But he's like, I don't know what I saw, but I loved it.
But in L.A., I remember when he was, the previews were about to start, because I saw the last preview in L.A., when before the show started opening, the only thing we were hearing through the grapevine was that Derek Delgado was doing a one-man magic show at the Geffen, directed by Frank Oz. So there was this expectation that was not met because it was something completely different. And I think once the show opened and ran for a couple of weeks, people started going, hey, you should see this interesting show. And it the word magic started leaving it. But when it first started, I remember going into that thinking I was seeing Derek Delgado's new kind of magic show. And in fact, that's not what it was. So I think it grew because the word magic started getting removed from it, even though it still has wonderful elements of magic in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's in, I believe, and he's talked about it in his podcast, but in their Penn & Teller's Masterclass again, too, they talked about, I think it was their manager's idea of there is no magic on their first Broadway show. Like, there is no magic mentioned at all in the title and anything, because then people are going to drop off their kids to see this.
Yeah.
And the same with Delgado. Like, it wouldn't have been as successful if they labeled it as a magic show.
Correct. I 100% agree.
Sad, but it's true because it's people's perception. You know, people will walk in with an opinion of something, and then you've already lost them.
Yeah.
You know, you can't build upon that anymore.
Correct. And I think that was something that was really interesting about that show that I took away from it was, if I label myself as a magician, there are stereotypes that go with that, and creating a show automatically gives you those stereotypes. So what is ways to break that barrier? So it kind of made me sad in the sense that I was really trying to rethink the kind of material I was doing and what I could do to not even go against those stereotypes, but not make you think of those stereotypes.
Sure. Yeah. And it's so hard too. It's like when people ask, what do you do? You're like, I'm a magician. And because I'm like, that doesn't really describe what I do.
Correct.
There's magic in the show. And yeah, a lot of it is magic, but I don't see myself as a magician. The longer I've been doing this, 20 years, I don't see myself as a magician anymore. I just see myself as a performer.
Correct.
And the show's funny and the show's magical and hopefully my personality comes through. But like, how do you market that? Like, that's the biggest struggle.
Yeah.
Here's this guy who's kind of a comedian, kind of a magician, and it hopefully is funny to you.
Yeah, even when I had a therapy session yesterday with a new therapist, and like even when I said what I did, I said I was a performer because I had realized that if I had said magician, like I would think interesting things about it. Like that. It's like I'm putting that label on myself and immediately thinking of like, well, is that what I do? Like, that's not really what I do. So it was that show really shook what I was thinking about myself, especially in this time right now where they're like, we're not doing anything and we don't really have an end in sight, so we're trying to adapt right now. And so like I'm constantly, and I've told you, like I've gotten a bunch of instruments right now and trying to figure out what kind of content to put up, and it still just makes me go, well, what am I putting up? Like, what does that mean if I put stuff out?
Because you see like the people that are successful, especially in this day and age, it's like, okay, they know, these internet people, like they know what they are putting out, and like, okay, it's this.
Yeah,
like you can't be, I learned that over the summer doing stuff with Taylor. It's like we're doing sketches, we're doing this, but it's like, you know, if it's not sticking to your brand, I guess your Instagram brand or your YouTube brand, if it's all over the place, it's not going to get traction because people don't know what to do with it. Like, they don't, it's not something they're, I don't know. It's hard to describe. It's just you have to market in such a small box these days.
Yeah, and like that's the problem I've always had kind of always doing this was I always wanted to sacrifice the idea of marketing to people or following the algorithms to get followers or whatever. And I'd rather just do what I liked doing and hoping people would just like that. And the people that like that. It comes from, have you ever seen or listened to the show Title of Show?
I don't think so.
I will get you hooked on that and you will just have a life epiphany because it's really weird. So it's a musical that was written, I think, the early 2000s. It's a musical about two guys writing a musical about two guys writing a musical. So the whole thing is super meta. It's like disgustingly meta. But the show is about two guys who are writing the show to submit to a musical theater competition. And the show they're writing is about everything they're doing to write that show. So the show is literally about the two people writing the musical, which is a musical about two people writing a musical. And all the it's not long. It was only like a one-act musical. It's only four people, a piano player, and four chairs on stage. There was no set. There was nothing. It ran off Broadway. It was this huge cult classic. And then it went to Broadway and failed miserably because it was too small of a show to fit such a large stage. But there's still this huge cult thing about it. Where is my point? Oh. So the end of the show, they have a song called Nine Favorite Things. And basically the chorus is, I'd rather be nine people's favorite thing than 100 people's ninth favorite thing.
That's powerful.
And like that I remember I listened to that. We were on In the Heights. Someone had said, you should listen to this show. And I was on the tour bus and I just had my headphones on. And I remember just weeping heavily in the back because I was like, woof, like, is that what I want to do? Like, that's a really hard, like, thing to accept. And I still feel that. And so, like, that's been the hardest thing for me is, like, everyone's like, oh, you should, like exactly like you said, like, if you put too many different types of things on one channel, like, there's no traction for it. And part of me wants to go, like, yeah. But part of me also kind of goes, like, well, then what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this really hard struggle of, like the art of it, like the artistry of it, and the actual doing something that's worth doing.
Yeah, it's the entrepreneurship of it, of like, okay, this needs to become something because, like, I don't like working for free, but, you want to do stuff you're passionate about, but also you want to make your living at it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's such a great point. And the internet has allowed that to happen. You know, it's like you can have a niche fan following of 100,000 people and make a nice living, but you have to just know that's what you want to do. And I go back and forth with that. I don't know if I want to be, I don't think I want to be like the star of something. I'm perfectly fine. Like, I loved being on tour with Justin. And I told Taylor, I'm like, when your special takes off, just hire me as the guy who travels with you. I'll set up the show, you know, do all the stuff, covert activities.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that is just, when I was a kid watching Copperfield, I enjoyed Copperfield, but I just always remember seeing like the guys that work with him, like the Chris Kenners. And I'm like, I kind of want to be that guy because there's no pressure.
No.
And you get to like have so much fun.
It was really fun.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah. I learned that from helping Nathan Phan. Nathan had a gig in Michigan. It was his first time, like a huge college paid for him way too much money. I mean, they offered him something and I said, you should offer this much. And they said, yes. And he was like, oh my God, what am I going to do with this? Like, I don't know what to do. And I said, well, just hire me, like, get me a plane ticket. I'll go with you. I'll be your manager essentially so that you don't have to worry about it. And it was so much fun to, because you still feel, it's why stage managers exist. It's why the people like crew members really do feel a part of the show because it really is, they are part of the show. And what's really nice about it in a magic show is there is no stress really on that end because he's still doing all of the work. He did all of the work. And so he also hired me one time. He was doing a show in, oh my God, I don't remember where that was. I think it was in Nevada. It was somewhere in Nevada, some theater. So it was really, really random. But he said, come over here, come like drive down here. I'll pay you, obviously, but like direct the show. I want you to watch the show from the front. It's a really big house. Just, you know, watch it. And so like we teched the show. I teched the whole thing with him and I like basically directed that show. And it was like small things. It was like I directed his bow, which is a really weird thing to like direct, but like I had done it, and I had directors in college like talk to me about like very specific things, which is really weird that I got across to Nathan. And as I was describing, like, do this, and he's like, oh, okay. And I'd be like, no, here's why. And he'd be like, oh, that makes sense. And I was like, yeah, why is nobody else doing that? But it was really, I had so much fun being the behind the person, and like consulting is always really fun to me. Like, that's so much fun. There's like not as much stress. I mean, there's stress in the moment that you have to create something within a time period, or create something, you know, the director or the writer wants this kind of moment to happen, and they don't really understand what that means. So there's mm-hmm. that kind of stress. But like, it's so rewarding to see your work and not actually doing physically on stage doing the work, but to see that work is really a rewarding thing that I wish happened more often.
Yeah, like you miss, I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't like say I would occasionally miss like people coming up and go, oh, wow, what a great show. I love that so much, or, you know, really affecting people on that sort of level. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like that is also so for my personality type, you know, yeah. for like the Nathan fans or the Justins out there, like they, you know, thrive on that. And that's a great thing. But for my personality type, like I get worn down emotionally by yeah. that. So it is nice to just to be a part of the production and, you know, get to see it from, you know, backstage. But there's no shame in it either.
No.
Too. It's like, I think people have this idea of like, well, you know, then you're giving up, or you're not really the star, but you're working as a team. You're working towards something bigger than yourself.
Correct.
And it's, I don't know. There's a lot there.
Yeah. My parlor show was an example for me that was like, it was so much work, even though I had a team that I was just exhausted, and it was rewarding, but it became not fun. But every time we'd finish that run of 21 shows or whatever, it just was like, I don't want to do this again for 6 months, a year. Like this was everything. I'm tired.
Yeah. I miss the castle, but man, those weeks are, I have not felt that exhausted since, you know, you work a week of 24 shows at the castle.
Correct.
It's like, it's an amazing amount of exhaustion. But, you know, if they open up tomorrow and Jack called me, I would literally walk out the door right now and start setting up.
Correct.
So. But yeah. Okay. Before we leave here, don't forget, we have a voicemail. We've had a few voicemails. I didn't read them before because Robert wasn't here. But the number is 818-927-1843. Leave us a voicemail. Tell us how you're doing. And we got one from our good buddy, Rob the Balloon Guy.
Yes.
You know, that's just his name. Don't steal things from him.
Yeah.
But yeah, don't forget, I'll play this. And don't forget, we have a show Saturday if you want to come. I don't think I forgave the website. NickPaulMagic.com or TwoMagiciansOneMic.com. That would help. How do people get tickets? I don't know. They didn't say. They never told us.
But I could call them and they'll give me, they'll help me.
but they want us to buy tickets, but he didn't give the link, but he gave us the email for free. This is why I'm terrible at business and I need to watch more of the Spanx Lady.
Yes. Go Spanx Lady. Let's get the Spanx Lady on.
Oh, yeah. Will you do my magic podcast and talk about business with us?
See, that's the secret. We don't say it's a magic podcast.
It's an entrepreneurial podcast for performers.
Hey,
there we go. We're already doing it.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Have a nice day. We're going to go out on this voicemail by Rob, the balloon guy. Here we go.
Hey, Nick. It's Rob Belchunas. I was wondering if you knew anything about the newest season of Fool Us. Apparently, there's a new award they're giving out for magicians who almost fool Penn and Teller, but not quite. I think it's called the Michael Close But No Cigar Award. Anyway, let me know. Thanks.
Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemic.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at twomagiciansonemic. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.